Hello, and thank you for joining us on this webinar today. My name is Matthew Walters, and I'm Head of Consultancy Services and Customer Value at LeasePlan UK, a division of one of the largest vehicle leasing companies in the world.
And I'm Tash Turner, a Fleet Consultant at ALD Automotive UK, which is also a division of one of the largest vehicle leasing companies in the world. And if you're wondering why both companies are represented here today, the answer is simple. ALD Automotive and LeasePlan recently began the process of integrating into a single company.
Or as we like to see it, one huge family. That process will complete later this year, at which point we'll operate under a shared name, a new global mobility brand, Avens. So look out for it.
But we're not actually here today to talk about Avens. We're here to talk about something that happened last week, the Budget 2024. Budgets are traditionally the biggest fiscal event of the year, ahead of the autumn statement that happens in, well, autumn. They're when the government of the day announces most of its major tax and spending decisions for the year ahead, and maybe even a bit beyond, if we're lucky. So there's always a great deal of anticipation around the budget. There may have been even more anticipation than usual around last week's budget. After all, this one is taking place in a general election year, when we'll go to the polls to decide on the next government. We don't want to get too political ourselves, though judging by the latest opinion polls, it's fair to say that. Things aren't looking too promising for the Conservatives of Hunt and Rishi Sunak, and they're looking rather better for Keir Starmer's Labour Party. So people wondered ahead of the budget, would the Chancellor be able to pull a rabbit out of the hat? Could he change people's minds ahead of the big vote? Again, we're not really here to talk about that today. Our focus is solely on what Budget 2024 means for fleets and motorists. And although it wasn't the most significant budget of recent times, it still contained a number of things for us to chew over. So let's get started.
Well, we say started. It's worth providing some wider context first, because that context both shapes the budget itself and helps us to make sense of its contents. So let's start with the economic context. In recent years, we've grown used to describing the unprecedented series of shocks that have affected the UK economy, and indeed economies worldwide. First came the pandemic and its lockdowns. Then came the country's complete departure from the European Union, which, however you voted, has certainly led to some teething problems. Then 2 years ago came Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the biggest ground war in Europe since 1945. Due to all of these events, we've endured supply issues, delivery days, price rises. These have not been abstract problems either, felt by other people somewhere else. Everyone watching this webinar will have experienced them firsthand. Take electric vehicles or EVs. The semiconductor chips that go into these vehicles were, well, rather hard to get hold of 2 or 3 years ago, and that made it more difficult to make electric vehicles. And that delayed deliveries and orders here in the UK. Thankfully, the situation is much better now. In fact, things are basically back to normal, but it's certainly been challenging across the past few years. So what about inflation? In 2022, we faced our highest levels of inflation for 40 years, and some of the heftiest price rises came in areas that matter hugely to fleets and motorists, like the list price or sticker price of vehicles, the cost of energy, electricity, and of course, petrol and diesel. Again, things are much better now, although there's certainly no room for complacency. Because, after all, something happened recently, a new development to shock us out of any complacency we may have been feeling. The UK entered recession. According to the Office of National Statistics, or the ONS, the economy shrank by 0.1% in the third quarter of last year, and then it shrank by another 0.3% in the fourth quarter. Seeing as a recession is technically defined as two consecutive quarters of negative growth, that means that, well, we technically were in recession, or we were. According to the latest numbers, we no longer are. In the meantime, it's worth noting that there really isn't that much difference between a recession and a non-recession. If these economic numbers had been just a tiny little bit better at the end of last year, a touch above zero rather than a touch below it, then a recession would not have been called. Even so, the fact that a recession was called does still mean something. It means that the UK economy is going through a difficult patch, even if it's growing at all. It also means that much more attention was focused on the economic forecasts in last week's budget, but more on those soon.
But before that, a short but important detour into another area of extra context, the legislative context. What policies have the government already induced to set the stage for Budget 2024? Here, we ought to begin by mentioning what is the biggest change in the world of motoring currently and perhaps even ever. And that is the shift away from fossil fuels and towards cleaner forms of propulsion, particularly electricity. The most important reason for this shift has been, of course, environmental necessity. If we're to combat climate change and breathe in healthier, cleaner air, then we need to find cleaner ways of getting around. But there have also been other reasons for the shift to electric, including the innovations of vehicle manufacturers and the incentives offered by politicians. These incentives still exist. If, for example, you look at the future rates of company car tax that Hunt himself announced in the autumn statement of 2022, you will notice that in the 24-25 year, a zero-emission EV will face a rate of just 2%, which is significantly lower than the rates faced by most fossil-fueled vehicles, which are generally around the 20% mark. That's a clear financial benefit to going green. It's also fair to say that after years of policies designed to encourage the uptake of EVs, the situation has become rather less clear in recent months. For starters, as more and more people are ditching fossil fuels and moving into EVs, the government is trying to find ways to raise money from electric motoring. This means that certain exemptions that EV drivers have enjoyed in the past, such as from paying VED, will disappear in the years ahead. And by far the biggest change in the government's position came last year, with Prime Minister Sunak's confirmation that he intends to go back on his predecessor Boris Johnson's pledge to ban the sale of new conventional petrol and diesel cars and vans by 2030. Instead, that ban will now come 5 years later in 2035. Is this a weakening of the government's stance on electric motoring? Well,
yes.
And it placed a spotlight on Budget 2024. Would the government do more to encourage the uptake of EVs, or would it row back on previous commitments? Before we arrive at some answers, we'd like to make some broader points about electric motoring. Despite Sunak pushing the fossil fuel back to 2035, leasing companies such as LeasePlan and ALD are still fully enthusiastic about EVs. Of course, each individual fleet or motorist will still need to assess their own individual needs, but on the whole, EVs are cleaner, increasingly practical, and could lead to major cost savings over the course of their lifetime on the road. That's why people are still turning to EVs now, and why manufacturers are more than happy to satisfy that demand. Besides, it's possible that Sunak's policy may not last. Like we said, there's a general election this year, and governments change. And the Shadow Business Secretary, Jonathan Reynolds, has already suggested that a Labour government could reinstate the 2030 deadline.
Right. So that's a lot of background material. It all makes it easier and quicker to explain what Budget 24 actually contained, starting with the major economic forecasts. So what did the budget have to say about growth? Or more specifically, what did the Office for Budget Responsibility, the OBR, those are the official forecasters who provide the numbers behind each fiscal event, have to say about growth? Are we going to be stuck in a recession for this or for the rest of the year, for years, for the rest of our lives? It's like melodramatic pause. The good news is that the OBR, or at least regards all of these scenarios as unlikely. They've actually slightly improved their growth forecast for this year as a whole, from the 0.7% they predicted at the time of last year's autumn statement to 0.8% now. They've also upped some of their forecasts for subsequent years. For instance, they now expect the economy to grow by 1.9% in 2025, which is rather better than the 1.4% they forecast in the autumn statement. Now, these feel like small changes and small shifts, but in the context of GDP, These are very, very big shifts, but don't whip out the champagne and party poppers just yet. 0.8% growth in 2024 is still hardly the sign of a booming economy. Indeed, none of the OBR's forecasts are especially high, which suggests that this is going to remain a challenging period for many businesses and individuals. Besides, remember that everything we're talking about here is forecasts, and forecasts can be wrong. If there's anything we've learnt in recent years, it's that unexpected things can happen to throw the economy off course.
And so to inflation, at the rate at which prices rise. Ideally speaking, the main measure of inflation, what's known as the Consumer Prices Index or CPI, should be around the 2% mark each year. That's the target level that for decades now, the Bank of England has been tasked with maintaining. So how have they been getting on in recent years? Not so good. As you'll see from our chart, annual CPI reached a decades-long high of 9.1% in 2022, and it was 7.3% last year. Though, of course, these wallet-busting levels weren't really the Bank of England's fault. As we said earlier, they were a result of some pretty seismic global events, including the COVID pandemic. And as you'll see from our chart, price increases do seem to be getting back to normal. The OBR reckons that CPI will be 2.2% this year, almost bang on the Bank of England's target level. And it's forecast to stay there or just under in the years ahead, which, if it happens, will be a relief to many.
Thanks, Tash. Okay, so that's the major forecast from the spring budget. What about the actual policies? So perhaps the standout for motorists concerned fuel duty. Oh yes, for yet another year, the main rate of fuel duty will be frozen at 52.95 pence a litre until at least March 25. Is this a surprise? Not really. Maybe a little bit. To explain what we mean, you've got to go back to 2012 when Chancellor George Osborne decided to freeze the main rate of fuel duty then at 57.95 pence a litre, rather than it increasing in line with inflation. So for over a decade now, no Chancellor has dared to touch fuel duty again, instead freezing it as Osborne had done year on year. Until that is, a Chancellor called Rishi Sunak, him again, decided to be even more generous. In March 2022, in response to rising fuel prices after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Sunak decided to implement a temporary 5p cut in the main rate, bringing it down to 52.95 pence a litre for the following year. That cut was due to be reversed in March 23. In fact, there were fears at the time of last year's budget that Chancellor Hunt wouldn't just reverse the temporary cut. He'd also increase fuel duty by inflation as well. That would have added a staggering 12 pence to the cost of petrol overnight. Thankfully, that didn't happen. Hunt was more generous than he needed to be. In Budget 23, he not only froze the inflationary part of fuel duty for another year, he also kept Sunak's once temporary 5 pence cut in place. And he's repeated the trick again in Budget 24. So like we said, not really a surprise, but maybe a little bit. Hunt's decision does raise two questions, though. First, is 52.95 pence a litre now the new normal? Which is to say, will any Chancellor be brave enough to reverse Sunak's no longer really temporary 5p cut? Or will they keep it in place forever? And second, what about fuel duty in general? After all, if we do eventually move into electric vehicles, whether that's by 2035 or an earlier or a later date, the government is going to have to recoup a lot of tax revenue that it previously raised from fossil fuel vehicles. Billions of pounds worth of tax revenue. In fact, £34.2 billion goes to the Exchequer every year currently from fuel duty alone. So what will happen? Well, for years now, there's been speculation that the government might move towards some form of road pricing instead of fuel duty. Fundamentally, that's the idea that road users, whatever vehicles they're in, will be charged for while using the road. So instead of taxing fuel, we'd have a nationwide system for taxing what is effectively driving itself, and that will include electric vehicles. In fact, on the eve of the Autumn Statement 2022, a former advisor to the former Transport Secretary, Grant Shapps, tweeted, and I quote, "Jeremy Hunt is expected to launch proposals on road pricing." Slight problem was Jeremy Hunt didn't launch those proposals, and he hasn't launched them since. Not in Budget 23, not in the Autumn Statement in 23, and he's ducked it in the Budget 2024 as well. So it appears as though one of the biggest decisions for the future of motoring in the UK is going to be left to, well, whoever wins the next general election later this year.
Pretty much. We've included a slide on vehicle excise duty, or VED, in this webinar, although in a way there's not really that much to say. The main VED rates for the 24-25 financial year have already been enshrined in the Autumn Statement 2023. For those who missed them at the time, the rates for cars and vans will be going up in line with another measure of inflation, the Retail Prices Index, or RPI. For most drivers, this amounts to annual increases of between £5 and £15. If you want to discover your specific increase, tables can, of course, be found on .gov.uk and other websites. I don't think it's going to be valuable going through every band right now. However, we did want to take this opportunity to highlight a significant change that's coming next year. From April 2025, zero emission vehicles, such as battery electric vehicles, will no longer be exempt from VED. This is one of those government policies we mentioned earlier, an attempt to make more money from the growing number of EV drivers. The upshot is that newly registered electric cars will face a first year rate of £10. After the first year, electric cars will have to pay the standard rate, which is £190 in 2024. This will be equalised with petrol, diesel and hybrid models. Except there's a problem. The system isn't quite equal. EVs will also face the expensive car supplement for vehicles with a sticker price of £40,000 or more, adding around £400 a year to costs for the first 5 years after the initial year of registration. Fossil-fueled cars also face this expensive car supplement. However, because EVs generally have higher list price or sticker prices than their fossil-fueled equivalents, of many new models topping £40,000, this measure feels more like a penalty against cleaner motoring. Frankly, it feels quite unfair and counterproductive for a country that's trying to head towards net zero. The leasing industry has raised this with the government, but no positive action's really been taken so far.
Okay, so over the past year, the government has turned to its previous super deduction, its previous super deduction policy from a temporary measure to a permanent one. They now call it full expensing, and it means that companies are able to claim 100% of their capital allowances in the first year on qualifying expenditure on new plant and machinery. And it's here to stay. It's been made permanent. So this means that forevermore, items such as forklifts, tools, computers, as well as vans, trucks, tractors, other plant and machinery will be able to be fully expensed against taxable profits. However, as of Autumn Statement 23, number one, cars weren't included in this scheme, and so were lease vehicles bought with the intention that they would then be leased. This meant that leasing companies, or lessors, could not reduce their tax bills accordingly and pass on the savings to their customers. Thankfully, our industry body, the BVRLA, as well as LeasePlan and other representatives from the leasing industry, has been on the case since March last year and has been working with the government, specifically HM Treasury and HM Revenue and Customs, to reach an accommodation. And progress has been made. So in last week's budget, the Chancellor announced in the main speech, and we quote, "The government will seek to extend full leasing to assets for leasing when fiscal conditions allow and will publish draft legislation shortly." Now, that's an important point. It wasn't a consultation or a draft consultation. It's draft legislation. And that draft legislation is said to include vans and trucks, raising the prospect that leasing companies will soon benefit from full expensing when they invest in new commercial vehicles. However, there's a couple of caveats that ought to be applied. Firstly, cars are not going to be included in the new legislation. So at the moment, electric vehicles that are purchased benefit from 100% first-year allowances. That still will not be extended to lessors yet. Second, those words in the budget itself, that any changes will happen when fiscal conditions allow, which may, of course, be some time away. For now, though, we wait for the details with hope.
The big budget policy that was previewed in most newspapers ahead of the Chancellor's statement last week was, of course, his decision to cut 2p off the main rate of national insurance, taking it from 10% to 8% for, it's claimed, 27 million employed and self-employed people. This will lead to an amount of an annual tax cut of £450 for those earning £35,000 a year, or more or less, depending on where you fall on the income scale. In any case, given the pressures that have been applied to personal budgets in recent year, this policy is a welcome respite. There are also some small ramifications for fleet, or more specifically, for those companies that offer cars through salary sacrifice, and for those motorists who claim a vehicle that way. Such schemes enable drivers to lease a low-emission car through their employer, fund it through their gross income, then pay tax, including national insurance, only on the income that's left. Lower national insurance rates means that that sum comes out marginally better.
Yeah. At which point, we should probably start wrapping up. In truth, there's not much more to add from the perspective of fleets and motorists. This was a budget that contained some important economic tidings. It contained one or two big policies for the voting public in a general election year. And for those on the roads, it continued the fuel duty freeze and raised the possibility of welcome changes to full expensing. These are not insignificant things. Even so, it's hard not to regard this as a budget defined by what it didn't contain rather than what it did. No news on a consultation into road pricing or whatever else is to follow fuel duty. No reprieve from the expensive car supplement for electric vehicles that, for the first time, will pay vehicle excise duty next year. No additional incentives for electric vehicles, such as the extension of the plug-in van grant, which, let's be clear, is £5,000 off the sticker price that runs out in March 2025. No company car tax bans for April 2028 and beyond, despite assurances from His Majesty's Revenue and Customs that we would see a year on year. We could go on, right? But you get the point. So there's a lot left for the government to do, whoever wins the general election this year. And in fairness, there's a lot left for us to do at LeasePlan and ALD.
And we don't just mean the change to Avens either. We know that there's a challenging, changeable time for our customers, and we are here to help them and you through it.
So please do get in touch if you have any questions after this webinar or just concerns in general about your fleet, your vehicles, your mobility options, and we'll see what we can do together. Thank you.
Thank you.